imagine there was some yelling going on in some Secret Service office somewhere. Put it on your Facebook page. Why not?
Sure.
Nobody will ever discover it there.
Welcome to Countless Screaming Argonauts. I am T-Fab P, the Fabulous Penguin.
And I'm Max in a Box.
Max in a Box. I like that. I love that. Max in the Box. And this is episode 114 of the award-winning, foot-stomping podcast of record, Countless Screaming Argonauts. Or as John and Scott referred to us, as the Screaming Argonaut guys or the Screaming Argonauts.
Screaming Crazy Argonauts.
Crazy Crazy Argonauts.
I did go back to the webpage and listen again to that thing, and they're kind of fun, and it's not a bad 4 minutes. Did you hear the conversation with Satan?
Yes, I did. I did find that on the thing, and I'm going to pull that out, and I'm going to put that in there too. Right. I haven't done it yet, but it's on my list of things to do.
If anyone's wondering, we're talking about being talked about by John and Scott from Total Talk Nonsense.
Right. They've talked about us 3 times now.
Yeah? 3?
Well, the first time they mentioned us, that was a long time
ago. Oh, that's right. That was a while ago. And I didn't send them a video cast, by the way. I sent them an audio file. But anyway, it doesn't make any difference.
Okay. So I got a couple of updates going. You ready?
Yeah.
We are the podcast of updates.
We are the podcast of updates, and we have some continuous themes, and I'll bet a nickel that I know what you're going to talk about, because it's what I'm going to talk about, I'll bet you. But go ahead, fire away.
Okay, well, the first one is that I have to let you know that College Boy and I
have started
our second batch of Blue Canary Cream Ale.
Uh-huh.
It is right now in a 5-gallon bucket in my clothes closet.
Where all the best beer comes from.
Right, making all my clothes smell like beer, which is just wonderful.
Which is not a big change.
Right. And we sterilized bottles today, and tomorrow morning, sometime around 11 a.m.,
yeah. We
begin the process of sugaring and bottling our beer.
Well, it sounds lovely. And you know what? Of course, it takes like 2 weeks to make beer, right?
Right, yeah. We made it last Saturday. And we're bottling it the following 8 days later on Sunday. And then we could probably drink it a week from tomorrow. But we'll wait until College Boy comes back for Christmas vacation, which will be in about 3 weeks. So it'll have a chance to, you know, really mellow out.
Well, I was thinking of you guys the other day as I was listening to Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Right.
And one of my favorite comedians of all time is Paula Poundstone.
Okay.
And she's going to be in Northampton December 4th
at
Calvin Theater.
Uh-huh.
So had I whirled enough in time, I would go up there and drag you guys to see.
Yeah, that would be cool, but I understand the dilemma.
Yeah.
There. Now, I have a second. Now, this is not an update, but it's a beer story, so they are related.
Okay.
Okay, Scottish brewing maestro BrewDog has launched what they are calling the world's strongest beer.
Oh, I think I saw this.
And the name is dedicated to me.
Yeah, I think
Tactical Nuclear Penguin.
We've got to get some of that.
Or TN Penguin, as I like to call it. It is 32% alcohol, which is 16 proof. Regular beer.
No. It's 64 proof, isn't it?
Or is that what? No, it's half.
It's double.
32% alcohol is. Oh, no, you're right. It's 64 proof, right, because it goes up to 200, right.
Right.
So it's 64 proof, 32% alcohol. Regular beer that you buy in the United States is about between 3.0 and 3.2, 3.3.
Yeah, so it's 10 times as powerful.
Right. Our first batch of Blue Canary Cream Ale tipped the scales at 5.
Which is a fine, robust stout.
Or
ale, I guess.
Right. It's a knock your shoes off kind of beer, I guess.
Tactical Nuclear Penguin.
Right.
That is fabulous.
It is.
And we have to find some of that.
Find some. Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be available online.
But officer, I only had one bottle.
Right. Blood alcohol level 7.3.
Yeah. How did you get home?
Amazing. I don't know. Amazing. Well, that's enough about beer.
All right.
I do have one more update, sort of update, and then I'll let you talk for a while. How's that?
All right. I have an update too.
Okay. Super Freakonomics is now out, the book.
Oh, what is that? A sequel to Freakonomics?
A sequel to Freakonomics. And I saw it in a Barnes & Noble this past weekend. And one of the things that Dubner writes a lot about in this particular book is Dr. Hand Hygiene. Huh. It's another one of our themes.
It is one of our themes.
Right. And this is what he has to say about it. He talks about how difficult it is to get doctors to change their behavior because them washing their hands doesn't really have a whole lot of effect on them. It's the effect on the patients.
Well, so MRSA is a growing problem.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But it's not the doctor's problem. It's the patient who gets its problem.
Yeah.
I guess is what they're saying. So they talked about that somebody wrote this article about some other effective means of discouraging infections in hospitals, including disposable blood pressure cuffs, infusing hospital equipment with silver ion for an
antimicrobial
shield. And you know what the biggest one is?
No.
Making the doctors not wear neckties.
Because
the United Kingdom Department of Health just completed a study that said that A, neckties are rarely laundered, 2, perform no beneficial function in patient care, and 3, have been shown to be easily colonized by pathogens.
Yeah, that's like the Santa Claus beard, right?
Absolutely, sure. I mean, I can think about, you know, I see the doctor. He's in my room. He's got the necktie. I've got an infection on my leg. He walks past and he bends over to take a look at his tie rubs against my leg. And 20 minutes later, he goes to see another patient with the same tie. I don't care if he gloves up, gowns up, and or washes his hands 25 times. If it's on his tie and that tie touches somebody else's wound.
He's redistributing pathogens.
He's redistributing it. So I thought that was pretty interesting that they have found that, and they're working on two different things. One is not allowing doctors to wear neckties, which they said, you know, that's the easiest solution, obviously. But there are some doctors who are not going to like their lack of formal wear. And so there is a company that's working on an antibacterial, antimicrobial tie. So
the antimicrobial is infused into the material in the tie.
Right.
How do you do that? Do you like dip your tie in?
You know, I don't know, but I would assume that it, you know, it probably means impregnating the material with a silver ion, iodide kind of thing, you know? And so I would assume that it probably has a life expectancy, but at least
it is that the stuff that they put in babies' eyes?
I don't know. A doctor's ties put in baby's eyes? I've never heard that before.
No, what is it? Silver iodine?
Oh, yes. I think that might be it. I know that on my on the wound on my leg, they used a silver iodine kind of thing.
And now your leg can see perfectly.
Absolutely. Huh. Don't have a problem with it. So what do you got, Max?
I'm going to have to take my head out of the box to do this. But
Max is out of the box.
Not yet. In another case of CSA podcast, and this one has to go in CSA podcast, the game, because this is classic for us. Here I am out of the box. A White House official says a Virginia couple who attended a state dinner without an invitation actually met President Obama. Did you hear about this?
I heard about it, and I heard something about – I saw a picture of maybe a woman who was shaking his hand or talking with him, and but I didn't have the sound on, so I couldn't hear what they were saying.
Well, yeah, and I don't – oh, yeah, here it is. Michaela and Tariq Salahi were admitted into Tuesday's dinner for India's visiting prime minister, although they were not on the official guest list of more than 300 people. It had been unclear how close they may have gotten to Obama. Well, these people went in to the big state dinner. It was the first state dinner that the Obama White House had. And I don't know if you know this, but they held the state dinner on the White House lawn. They built a huge tent because there wasn't enough room in the official White House dining room for as many guests. I think there were 300 guests.
Okay.
But they put up a huge tent, and they had their traditional security.
Right.
And the Secret Service said that everybody went through several magnetometers. They said that there were Secret Service agents all over the place, Marine guards and all the rest, and the president and the people inside were never in danger. But here's where it gets back to CSA. They put their pictures on their Facebook page. There's pictures of these people with Obama now, with Katie Couric, with Joe Biden, with any number of celebrities, and nobody knew. But then they put their pictures on their Facebook page.
And they found out who they were.
And, yeah, people were like, I mean, I don't know how it was discovered, but I imagine that once it got back to the Secret Service, somebody's ass came out red.
Well, I would say that somebody was told you have a lot of splaining to do.
I think so.
You know, you got a lot of splaining to do.
Now, I did see an interview with one of those stern-looking people who you never saw before, and you don't know who it is, but you're sure they were in either the CIA or the Marines or something. It's always yes, ma'am, and we'll get to the bottom of it kind of stuff.
Short haircut kind of deal.
Well, in fact, this guy was completely bald, but
even worse.
But anyway, he did mention that there were at least three crimes that he could think of right off the top of his head. No pun intended. These people are going to get arrested.
Right.
At the very least, they lied to the Secret Service. They lied to a federal agent.
Okay.
They're going to jail, not because they broke into the White House fancy dinner, but because they put it on their Facebook page. Now, does that sound familiar?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So,
yeah,
anyway.
We might have to go into the CSA podcast game.
Right. That's pretty much what I had. I just, it's another case of don't put it on your Facebook page.
Absolutely.
I mean, you can ask yourself
how they got in. Where it's manipulation of things. You know, you call somebody up and you say,
"Oh, social engineering." Yeah.
Social engineering, right? There you go. I wonder if that's what they did. You know, oh, I'm sorry. I left my ticket home.
Well,
kind of thing, but I know Joe Blow over there, and
there's one of two possibilities. Either they forged their ticket, which I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's a crime.
Yeah.
Or they lied to a federal agent when they said, "Oh, we left ours at home." Now, who leaves their ticket to the White House first formal dinner at home?
Well, I put it in my scrapbook.
Right. That's actually a good one. But yeah, sorry, you've got to go back and get it. And the Secret Service said there was a breakdown in security. You're exactly right. It probably is social engineering. They said something to someone, and they let them through anyway.
Right.
I imagine somebody's rank got busted, their job got fired, something bad happened.
Somebody got pretty red-faced, I think.
That's right.
Yelled at, probably.
I imagine there was some yelling going on in some Secret Service office somewhere.
You would think so.
You did what? They said what? And you thought that was okay.
And you let them go where? Right?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Now, the couple, I mean, they just had their pictures taken anywhere. The wife is, well, I guess the couple is due to be on a show called The Real Housewives of Washington, D.C.
Uh-huh.
I think that.
Well, so now she'll have a story to tell.
Yeah, from jail. Put it on your Facebook page. Why not?
Sure.
Nobody will ever discover it there. It's so private.
Go ahead. Go for it.
Anyway, like I said, that's all I got.
Idiots. I love it. Well, you know, this bringing up the top, the subject of topics that we've discussed before, I had a thing about net neutrality that I thought was real interesting.
Okay.
Okay, this past week, White House Deputy Chief Technology Officer, that's a mouthful.
Yeah.
Andrew McLaughlin said that, who originally said, and continues to say actually, that free speech and network neutrality are intrinsically linked.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, made some comments about China that got under some people's skin.
In China?
Yes. He compared censorship in China, where Obama's recent comments on the open internet values were blocked on Chinese websites.
How perfect is that?
Yep. To the need for net neutrality rules so as to prevent corporations from acting as gatekeepers of information and speech.
Oh, I have to interrupt you because I'm glad you brought this up. John McCain has a new bill out, and I believe it's called the Internet Freedom Act.
Yes, and it's the exact opposite of
and
that.
It's the exact opposite of that. And I was listening to Leo Laporte and his guests on his podcast, and he said, please, write your congressman. And by the way, you have to trust Leo.
Sure.
And anybody that you can think of and say, we've got to stop this bill. This is wholly a bad thing and a big fat lie.
Right.
But
well,
anyway.
What it comes down to is the phrase John McCain's Freedom, Internet Freedom Act is a Orwellian term.
It exactly is.
It's the exact opposite of that. It's not. It's restrictive. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Right, and it's written by the telecoms.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Well, they come into mention in this article too, because after McLaughlin compared censorship in China to the Net Neutrality Act,
yeah.
He said, if it bothers you that the Chinese government does it, then it should bother you that your cable company wants to do it.
Right, exactly.
Right. And then later on, the Computer and Communication Industry Association, which is a trade group that represents big companies in the telecom field and high-tech industries,
right,
agreed with McLaughlin. They said that net neutrality and free speech are significant issues, that internet censorship and net neutrality are just
– But are they in favor of net neutrality?
Bad things. Bad things.
They said net neutrality is bad things?
No, he was saying that if you say that they are, it's bad. Unrestricted, the internet may be mankind's greatest tool ever to promote individual freedom. We need to do everything we can to protect that possibility, and if we aren't careful, it can become a tool to censor, surveil, and manage captive audiences.
Well, it's already surveilling.
Right.
But now I'm confused. The gaming companies and the telecom?
Computer and Communication Industry Association, which is a trade group for telecom and high-tech industries.
So now they're on board?
Yes, they are. They are. However, it doesn't mean that they represent all of the telecom industry.
Yeah.
That some of the companies in the telecom industry and high-tech industries.
Yeah, and there are companies that are fighting each other, like Nokia.
Oh, absolutely.
And AT&T.
Well, you know, you and I talked about this when we talked about the swine flu.
Yeah.
You know, and the possibility was raised that maybe some companies would have to step in and kind of plug up the pipes a little bit in some areas and open up the pipes in other areas so that, you know, quote-unquote important medical information got through.
Yeah.
You know, what it comes down to is I don't want nobody playing with my tubes. Keep your freaking hands off of my inner tubes.
That's right. That's right. Right now we have to put John McCain in the same class with Ted Stevens, I'm afraid.
Well, yeah. I mean, he was already there, though. I mean, anybody in their right mind who heard him talk about computer and internet over last summer before the election was ridiculous. He didn't have a clue as to what goes on.
No, and you were right again. The Orwellian aspect of it is
the Internet Freedom Act. Yeah, the internet believed this so that we could.
But I mean, that's classic Washington. Now I think it started in the Reagan era, but I could be way off on that. But the Clean Air Bill, the Clean Water Bill, you know.
No, I could be wrong, but I think it's been around a lot longer than that.
Could be.
It seems as if, and this will be my political statement for the day, it just seems as if more recently, at least in my lifetime with the Republicans in office when they were, that it reached a fever pitch.
Well, Karl Rove was in on all policy decisions, and his thing was strictly from a strategic standpoint. And one thing they learned somewhere along the way, I keep going back in my mind to James Watt and the Department of the Interior, who worked for Reagan and was charged with taking care of our national lands and, you know, sold the drilling rights on them.
Right. Well, Department for the Interior is is another one of those Orwellian terms.
Right, right. But it is classic.
And that's Carl Rove, evil genius, right?
That's Karl Rove, evil genius. Yeah, I forgot to put his full name on there.
Right, you gotta use it.
Anyway, I guess I'm done harassing. Oh, there's one other thing, and I don't know all the details of this, and I probably shouldn't have brought it up until I did, but I know you're a big fan of John C. Dvorak.
Yes, I am.
A couple of months ago, he went after Obama's new chief technology officer.
Uh-huh.
And my problem is I don't know the guy's name, but Dvorak looked into his background.
Oh, yeah, I remember hearing about this, and it was, like, really poor, right?
Yeah, basically he's a fraud.
Right, right.
But he went to some bogus junior college, you know, and has a general degree in something like technology.
Right,
but
right,
he's really not qualified to be setting national policy, which we obviously need a national strategy for what to do with things like the internet, how we're going to approach it, how we're going to manage it. Change is happening so fast. It would be nice if we directed some of it. You mentioned the vice chief of technology, or whoever it was in your
right,
first.
McLaughlin.
Yeah,
yep.
That's not the guy.
Right, it's somebody else. Well, I always thought, Max, that, you know, right after you become king of the world and you start the Breedmaster General program,
yeah,
that the second thing you got to start is you have to start a technology. I mean, we need a technology czar.
You know, if I never hear the word czar again, it'll be too soon.
Well, I think you should appoint College Boy technology czar.
I would I'd be happy to appoint College Boy my chief technology officer, technology strategist national. Anything but czar. First of all, the Republicans are exploiting it. I saw a thing on Fox News about Obama's got like 18 czars, which
and they're horrified at that. But I think Reagan had 37 or something, right? 38.
I don't know what it is, but it's a stupid name. I mean, this is a rant that I've had before. Why can't we call them managers or directors or something? You know, czar is just a ridiculous title.
You know, I think they should be king of all internet, king of all.
King, you know? King is only marginally better than czar, it's particularly in a democracy, which I'm under the illusion that we're still a democracy. But anyway, I guess we beat that horse fairly well.
Well, that's okay. I got one more quick thing, and then let's get out on a joke.
All right,
or the equivalent. So I'm reading some baseball blogs, and I run across this guy's blog, and he talks about the fact that, did you know that this week the ballots for the Baseball Hall of Fame went out?
I did not know that.
They went out this week, and they have to be in by I forget exactly when they have to be in by. And everybody's talking about, you know, who's the new names that are added, and who they think belong and who doesn't belong.
Mm-hmm.
And the discussion got to Mark McGuire, and this guy goes off.
Oh, McGuire is qualified for the first time?
Well, no, I believe it's his second time, but he only got like 20% last time. He just
Oh, he was eligible last year.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. But he made enough so that he's back on the ballot this year. And he started going off on this rant about Mark McGwire in the Hall of Fame. And it's, you know, I'll be honest with you, it's the same old, same old.
Well, we know the story. Argument.
But he then said, and by the way, and this is a quote from the blog, why is it okay for McGwire to just waltz back into baseball as a batting coach of the Cardinals? Would we let Barry Bonds come back in? This is sure. unacceptable, and it gives credence to the very disturbing claim that race is at play when it comes to punishment of steroid cheats.
Well, what's to prevent Barry Bonds from
becoming
a batting coach?
Other than
the fact that Barry Bonds is an asshole.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what prevents it. Okay, here's the deal. Way back in the 60s, okay, Willie Mays wanted to represent a casino in
Atlantic
City. And was told that he couldn't do that, that it was against the
Willie Mays and Mickey Mantle were both suspended by Bowie Kuhn.
Right. But Mickey Mantle had been doing it for a year and a half or 2 years, and it only came to light when Willie Mays was going to do it, and then they said, well, we have to suspend you both. A lot of people say that Bonds has gotten the treatment that he has as a racial thing. And when you think about baseball and racism in general, I mean, there are lots and lots of stories that can be told about what baseball has and hasn't done, including the fact that, you know, it wasn't until the early 40s that a black could even play baseball in the United States. And there are people who feel that, you know, that McGwire just kind of waltzed back in. But if Barry Bonds wanted to come back in, there are a lot of people that would raise a ruckus and say he's a steroid cheat. He shouldn't be allowed back in, et cetera, et cetera.
Well,
I agree. I think that's exactly what would happen.
I disagree. I dispute the whole premise.
Yeah.
I don't think that Barry Bonds would be denied the ability to be a coach. I think we have I accept the underlying premise that baseball probably doesn't treat blacks the same way that it treats whites. But I do think that it's much improved, and I also think you need to give baseball credit for the great stride forwards, Branch Rickey in particular. Obviously, Jackie Robinson is one of my heroes. It was, you know, an amazing, admirable figure. And
right.
his whole story reflects, well, I guess kind of good and bad on baseball.
Sure.
I mean,
I'm not saying let me just say this. I'm not saying that they wouldn't let Bonds back in.
Oh, I thought that's what you were saying.
No, what I'm saying is I think that McGwire just kind of walks in and nobody says a thing. If Bonds was going to come back, there would be a lot of people saying no, that he shouldn't. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I dispute that because I think he would be allowed to be a batting instructor. I also don't think that there are any teams in the league, with the possible exception of the Giants, that would have him because he's an asshole.
Oh, I you know, no argument there for sure.
So it's impossible to say that I hate you because you're black, but not because you're an asshole, or the other way around. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Pick a different steroid-using black player, and then we'll run the test.
Uh-huh.
But generally, McGwire was well-liked.
Well, you know, let me – well, no. I understand what you're saying. What I was going to say is that I'm sure that there are plenty of white assholes out there, too.
Absolutely. Look at Pete Rose.
Who don't get treated in the same way.
Pete Rose was an asshole.
He still is.
Baseball fucked him.
And there are still people who are calling for him to be in the Hall of Fame.
And to let me not stop before I say Pete Rose fucked himself.
Right. Oh, sure. Absolutely.
But I think we need to come closer to apples and apples in this discussion. Yeah, there's plenty of white asshole ballplayers who have probably been using steroids. I was going to say, look at the way people are treating Alex Rodriguez, but I'm not sure. first of all, that he's an asshole. Secondly, that he's black. I know there's a distinction between Hispanics and blacks, and I don't get it, and so he's probably not a good choice. But I just don't think you can – first of all, I don't believe anyone would stop Bonds. He's not been suspended by baseball.
Right.
To me, it would be indefensible to say he couldn't have a job in baseball till he's been suspended.
Well, he argued that he couldn't even get a job as a designated hitter because of that he was
because he's an asshole.
Well, maybe, possibly.
Let me repeat my favorite Barry Bonds story.
You and I are not going to get the answer to this, but I definitely think this might be one for Manhattan Man to weigh in on.
I'd be interested in his opinion.
Yeah.
Let me just repeat real quickly that Barry Bonds, who was a scholarship all-star player at the university at Arizona State, was voted off the team by all the other members of the college baseball team because he was an asshole. He couldn't get along with Jim Leland. Everybody in baseball except one person loves Jim Leland.
That would be Barry Bonds?
That would be Barry Bonds. So it's not a good choice to make your political statement, which may or may not be true. I just think he's a poor person to carry your banner.
Well, we'll get Manhattan Man to weigh in on this one.
Yeah.
But our time is up, but we have time for a joke and maybe a segue. So lay it on us, Max.
Okay. News of the weird. In September, prominent Egyptian scholar Abdul Muti Bayami urged the death penalty for people selling virginity faking devices that make women appear to bleed on their wedding nights. One such gadget made in China was openly for sale in Syria for the equivalent of about $15. Death penalty.
Death penalty.
My question, what about Viagra?
Ooh, interesting question.
One more under the column of more Sharia weirdness. The radical Islamist group Al-Sha'ab in Somalia recently began accusing and beating robed women whose bras made their breasts, even though covered, look too provocative. One mother told Reuters in October that police told her that any firmness must be natural and not bra enhanced.
Well, I'll tell you, Max, I think this one might go under the motto, CSA podcast motto of keep your hands off of my
woman's breasts.
For this one, yeah, keep your hands off my bras.
Well, I've got another question. What about Viagra? And let me finish with Britain's National Health Service in August granted a free prescription of Viagra to recidivist sex offender. And how many times have we said that on the podcast?
Right.
Roger Martin, 71, whose latest conviction last year involved an 11-year-old boy.
And all you can say to that is, what about Viagra?
And they're giving him Viagra. This is a blind spot, I think.
It might be.
Maybe that's
–
I guess that's
maybe
all
that's
I
the point of it.
I mean, bras? Seriously? Bras? Which stood on rocky shores and kept the beaches shipwreck free. Though I respect that a lot, I'd be fired if that were my job. After killing Jason off and countless screaming Argonauts, the bird of freedom.